You've heard our open themes with listeners talking about their vocations.
Missouri dairy farmers, love issues, etc.
And what they're doing while listening to issues, etc.
This is Mark from Michigan, and I am a lawnmower listener. We love issues, etc.
We're looking for more of these elements to include in our open themes. Tell us about your vocation, hobby, or what you do while listening to Issues Etc. Call the Issues Etc. comment line 24/7 at 618-223-8382. If you make a mistake, just start over. 618-223-8382. Thanks for listening, and thanks for contributing to Issues Etc. 618-223-8382.
What follows is my 100-day action plan to make America great again.
Think about what we can accomplish in the first 100 days of a Trump administration.
I don't think there's ever been a president who in this short period of time has done what we've done.
That's President Trump, both on the campaign trail and after his election and inauguration, discussing what has been accomplished in the first 100 days. That's kind of the arbitrary mark that we have in the modern era put on presidents to keep some of their major promises, or at least to begin to keep some of their major promises. 100 days is, as I said, it's arbitrary, but it's also a measure of the president, any president's willingness to do what they said they were going to do, or as is most often the case, to do their best to do what they said they're going to do. Greetings and welcome to Issues Etc., coming to you live from the studios of Lutheran Public Radio in Collinsville, Illinois. I'm Todd Wilkin. Thanks for tuning us in. Mark Hemingway, senior writer for the Weekly Standard, will join us here to talk about President Trump's first 100 days in office. We're going to do a little twist on Christ in the Old Testament with Pastor Brian Ketchelmeyer. Just be patient. We'll explain ourselves where Christ is not in the Old Testament. There are places where Christ is not, like, for instance, the empty tomb. It's very important that Christ is not in the empty tomb. We'll work off that theme and talk about where Christ is not in the Old Testament with Pastor Brian Ketchelmeyer. Then an hour or two of Issues Etc., the subject of biblical manhood. It's a big subject in the church today. A lot of, well, kind of hokey solutions to the fact that men don't seem to be too interested in church. We'll talk about true biblical manhood in a Christ-centered, cross-centered perspective with Pastor Jeff Hemmer in hour two of Issues Etc. Feel free to join us with a question or a comment, 1-877-623-MYIE. Our email address, talkback@issuesetc.org. Send us a tweet at issuesetc, or you can go to our Issues Etc. comment line, 618-223-8382, and leave a question, comment, show, suggestion, or criticism there, especially for our beloved on-demand listeners. Joining us to discuss President Trump's first 100 days in office, Mark Hemingway. He's a regular guest, senior writer for the Weekly Standard, based in Washington, D.C. Mark, welcome back to Issues Etc.
Glad to be back.
What did President Trump absolutely need to accomplish in order to satisfy his supporters in his first 100 days?
Well, I know this sounds like I'm setting a very low bar here, but Trump is a very unconventional candidate. We never had a president in American history like this that had no prior political or military experience. And so a lot of what Trump had to do was simply prove that he could be president. Now, the jury is still out on that in serious ways. But having said that, I think he's been reasonably successful, given some enormous challenges on the foreign policy front. And the appointment of Neil Gorsuch to the Supreme Court was one of his top promises, was one of the top reasons why anyone voted for him. And, those have been significant successes, but, he's got a long way to go in other ways as well.
Talk about the way we do this 100-day thing and why it is and why it isn't always a useful measure of a president straight out of the gate.
Yeah, well, we do this primarily because new presidents always have sort of a honeymoon period, which is to say that people are looking for change. They're, optimistic about, a new president. And so during that time when public sentiment is very high, that's sort of traditionally been the opportunity a president has to go out and get a lot of stuff done, because they won't be met with a lot of political resistance, because people won't be, you know, looking to upset a leader that is, you know, popular with the American people at the time. However, it doesn't always work out that way. I mean, Bill Clinton wasn't terribly popular during his first 100 days and didn't get a lot done. And he went on to have a pretty successful presidency. You know, similarly, you know, Barack Obama, you know, got a lot done in his first 100 days. And, you know, he left a very divided country after 8 years, which, you know, culminated in the election of someone as unorthodox as Donald Trump. So, you know, it is, at the end of the day, kind of an arbitrary thing. But, you know, there's also a reason why people do trumpet it. But, you know, at the same time, Trump never really had the traditional honeymoon period in the polls. So I don't know how much the 100-day measure is really going to mean for him.
Discuss the executive order as kind of a, it's not a constitutional entity, it's just an unenumerated power of the president over his branch of the government, but it is often used to get stuff done in the first 100 days.
Well, we have the situation in America, the political science term for it is the administrative state, which is to say that the executive branch has gotten so big and Congress has willingly signed off so many of its legislative powers basically to unelected bureaucrats within the federal bureaucracy that you as president can actually get quite a lot accomplished simply by directing the people in the federal bureaucracy to do things very specifically. And that's kind of where executive orders have come about. There's a lot of, you know, complaints about executive orders under the Bush presidency because he was issuing a lot of them, but they were primarily directed at national security issues. It was really Obama in recent years, because he was facing such a divided government. You know, the Democratic Party suffered such a huge loss in Obama's first midterm that Obama couldn't really get anything major through Congress after that. So he looked toward executive orders as a way of getting things done. But the problem, as we're seeing with executive orders, is that because Obama did so much through executive orders, so much of that is just being undone now that we have a Republican in the White House immediately following him. If you're a president and you want to have a lasting legacy, you still have to build some sort of political consensus. You still have to work with Congress, and you still have to get actual laws passed to have the kind of, you know, legacy that you want.
Well, let's start with domestic, and I think probably the biggest thing that people would associate with a kind of 100-day promise, or I'm going to get this done right away, and in fact, I think he even said several times on the campaign trail that it was going to be his first order of business, was to repeal so-called Obamacare, the Affordable Care Act.
Yeah, that might have been a case where Donald Trump was overpromising a tad, which is just to say that healthcare is extraordinarily complicated and it's extraordinarily consequential. You can't just, you know, walk right in and upset the apple cart when so many people are depending on, you know, their insurance as, you know, a kind of literal lifeblood. The Republican Party in Congress has to proceed very carefully and work with the president very carefully in making sure that when they, you know, repeal and or replace Obamacare, they do so in a way that is cautious and doesn't upset their voters, both because they don't want to deal with the political consequences of it, but they also don't want to deal with the economic consequences and clearly the health consequences of leaving people without health insurance. So, you know, I think that people have had to readjust their expectations for that, but Republicans at the same time, including Trump, have campaigned very hard against Obamacare, which has historically been pretty unpopular since it's been passed. It's been gaining in popularity recently at the threat of redoing the healthcare system one more time in a traumatic way. But obviously, like I said, we're adjusting our expectations. Republicans still are hopeful about getting something done soon, but the news we've been hearing today that they don't quite have the votes in the House for the plan the latest iteration of the plan. So they're still having to adjust.
What other domestic issues were kind of on the forefront of the 100-day agenda, either formally or informally, that have either been acted on or not?
Well, obviously, immigration was a big issue for Donald Trump, and certainly it was for a lot of voters as well. And that's been kind of an interesting issue. I mean, on one hand, Trump has tried to do several, you know, dramatic things through executive orders, and the liberal judiciary seems to want to, you know, block everything he does for reasons that I'm straining to understand in legal terms. You know, I don't even necessarily agree with everything that Donald Trump has done on immigration, but the fact of the matter is that in this country for a long time, it's been understood that the president has quite a lot of latitude on immigration policy. You know, and it is a national security function that kind of naturally falls under the executive. Further, a big problem with the existing immigration system is that so many existing laws that are actually on the books aren't being enforced. So even in a lot of cases, the judiciary is causing problems where the Trump administration is trying to get enforcement on existing laws with, you know, he's trying to use carrot and stick measures for sanctuary cities and other things like that. So he's been trying to do stuff, but he hasn't been too effective at getting things done concretely. Having said that, it's been interesting. You know, obviously there's still been a lot of rhetorical focus on immigration, and immigration, illegal immigration and border crossings have dropped precipitously since Trump became president. I think precisely because he's setting a different tone and sending a message that, you know, we're going to actually be attempting to enforce these laws, and it's being heard on the other side of the border.
And that's not only a domestic issue, it's also a foreign policy issue, isn't it?
Absolutely, you know, and a national security issue, frankly. You know, there are all kinds of issues at play here, everything from terrorists sneaking across the border to, you know, violent gangs like MS-13 that have been setting up shop in cities around the country and committing some pretty horrific crimes. And the other big issue, of course, is drug trafficking. There's a big part of the opioid crisis in America is that after the, you know, opioid addicts, you know, run out of their prescription pills, they've been turning to cheap Mexican heroin, which has been coming across the border with alarming ease, and the quality of the heroin is of alarming purity, and it's contributing to a lot of overdoses. And by the end of the campaign, he was quite explicit about stopping the heroin flowing from the border, and this was heard throughout a lot of communities where they're struggling with the opioid crisis. And so it wasn't just a matter of immigration. The border wall was seen as a way of dealing with the opioid crisis, which I think is still an issue that people in Congress have not addressed effectively, and Trump hasn't quite gotten around to addressing it specifically, although I think he did just appoint Chris Christie in some sort of some sort of opioid crisis czar-type position, so hopefully they'll be doing more work on that soon.
One of the things that President Trump, then-candidate Trump, promised to do several times on the campaign trail was to get a report as quick as possible from all the departments of the government on what were wasteful projects and to cut them out, downsizing government and eliminating government waste. That's nearly impossible in Washington, isn't it?
Yeah. I mean, it's difficult, but at the same time, what's interesting is that I actually do a fair amount of sort of self-policing, in the sense that there are inspector generals and the Government Accountability Office and stuff regularly issue reports that are just contain jaw-dropping examples of, you know, waste, fraud, and mismanagement. And the political culture in this country just isn't keyed into A, covering this stuff, and, you know, B, putting the kind of pressure on to fix it. And it's just, in general, very hard to go up against the federal bureaucracy, which is just, you know, incredibly powerful. You know, it is very nearly impossible to fire a federal worker. I mean, I think even at the height of the VA crisis, where you had, you know, veterans on waiting lists dying for, you know, waiting for health care, you know, I think the New York Times reported a few years ago that maybe three people had been fired over that. And you know, it's just the reality of the situation. So hopefully, you know, somebody can go in there and fix it at some time. But, you know, Trump, I think, is more focused on trying to establish an affirmative agenda rather than, you know, in terms of, you know, doing new things as opposed to reforming the system and draining the swamp, as he was so fond of talking about.
Let's talk about the foreign policy. What would be at the top of the list of things accomplished in the first 100 days?
Well, he's actually completely reset American foreign policy in the Middle East, and for the better. The Obama administration did something that was really remarkable, and I don't think that the American people quite realized what was going on, but it was pretty apparent if you're paying attention by the end of his two terms, which is that he decided that he was going to completely shift the balance of power in the Middle East away from traditional American Sunni allies like, you know, Saudi Arabia, and focus everything onto the Shiite, you know, Islamic Republic of Iran, and, you know, and use that as sort of a counterbalance to what was going on in the Middle East. In fact, there's an amazing quote, I think it was from Ben Rhodes, Obama's National Security Council spokesman, who actually said, the thing that we were most focused on, which was Iran, was the thing we talked about the least in public. And if you look at how Obama conducted his foreign policy, where, you know, he said that there were red lines in Syria, you know, involving chemical weapons attack, and then when they crossed those lines, he didn't do anything about it. I mean, all of the stuff that Obama did, it was specifically designed not to anger Iran and do that so he could get that nuclear deal with Iran. And, you know, that would explain why, in fact, he didn't upset the apple cart with Assad in Syria, because, you know, that was sort of in the sphere of influence for Iran. So Trump, by striking Syria the way that he did recently, basically completely reset the map. I mean, this made our traditional allies in the area overjoyed. It put Russia on notice. You know, Russia initially was, you know, being, you know, sort of making noises about how they weren't going to cooperate with the U.S. and let us bomb Syria. But then, you know, pretty soon they were saying that their support for the Assad regime in Syria was not unconditional. And, you know, obviously it certainly put Iran on notice. So it definitely has had a big impact. And on top of that, even a lot of liberals like what Trump's done in terms of foreign policy, because what he's done has been measured. He has not, you know, gotten us into a ground war or anything yet, but at the same time, he actually has addressed the humanitarian concerns that so many people were concerned about that Obama ignored. You know, so all in all, it's been a pretty good report card, you know, in the sense that he has reset the table in the Middle East to, you know, reaffirm our support for traditional allies like Israel and Saudi Arabia, and at the same time gotten a lot of praise from Obama, the foreign policy officials, for actually addressing the humanitarian concerns in the region that Obama failed to address.
And where does it leave us with Russia? How would you describe that briefly?
Well, it's really complicated, and, you know, I'm not, just because Trump's made some positive moves here, we're certainly not out of the woods yet. You know, Russia is now trying to expand their influence to Afghanistan, and it seems like they're constantly poking us. But at the same time, they, you know enough not to be too provocative, which is why they stood down in Syria, even though they've, you know, been providing air cover for Assad and enabling his chemical weapons attacks and other things like that. So it's very hard to say how Russia's going to respond to Trump in the long term. But for now, I think they're smart enough to realize that Trump can actually be provoked to a point where he's going to respond, whereas Obama was just rolling over and letting Russia, you know, set up no-fly zones in the Middle East where the U.S. military could no longer even operate because he was so irrationally reticent to get involved in, you know, that part of the, in that region, because, or in a mess with the Russian interests, because he didn't want to upset Russia's close ally in Iran.
Finally, then, with only about 30 seconds, has President Trump manned his administration fully yet?
Not even close. I mean, there's all kinds of, like, important but minor functionaries that haven't been appointed. You know, there's a lot of positions these days require Senate confirmation, and they've actually been really dragging their feet on this, in part because they've been focused on these other big legislative priorities like health care. But they need to do a much better job of filling those positions. But having said that, if you look at the top ranks of government, I think that he's done a pretty good job of filling out his cabinet. In fact, he's got a more actually conservative cabinet than, you know, George W. Bush ever had, and for a guy that was supposedly, you know, an untrustworthy Republican, it looks pretty good from the point of view of the conservative Republican base.
Mark Hemingway is senior writer for the Weekly Standard based in Washington, D.C. You can follow Mark on Twitter at Heminator, that's HEMINATOR, and read his columns at issuesetc.org. Click listen on demand. Mark, thanks for being our guest.
Glad to be here.
When we come back, we're going to continue our series, Christ in the Old Testament. We're going to do a little twist on it, though, kind of based upon the empty tomb, where Jesus most definitely is not. Where is Christ not in the Old Testament? Pastor Brian Ketchelmeyer will be our guest. Stay tuned.
Parents, you know the church is persecuted even when you don't feel it or see it. But how can you prepare your children for a post-Christian world where that persecution is increasingly obvious? Read the May issue of The Lutheran Witness to learn more about catechesis, persecution, and why it's your job, not your pastor's, to train your children in the faith. Visit cph.org/trylutheranwitness for a special offer, $6.99 for 6 digital or print issues. The Lutheran Witness, interpreting the contemporary world from a Lutheran perspective.
Throughout the 50 days of Easter, sacred music for the world. LutheranPublicRadio.org. Listen 24/7 to sacred music for the Easter season. LPR, LutheranPublicRadio.org.
Quality, quantity, qualified. You're listening to Issues Etc.
Faith in American Christianity is most often seen as an act of will. It's a desire, it's an attitude, it's a habit.
Pastor Todd Peppercorn, on his presentation at this summer's Issues Etc. Making the Case Conference, making the case for a Lutheran view of depression.
But what happens when you have a mental illness? Whether we're talking about depression, bipolar disorder, schizophrenia, or any number of mental illnesses, all of these mess with your brain, your ability to interact with the outside world. How does God work in that kind of circumstance?
You can meet and hear Pastor Todd Peppercorn June 9th and 10th at the Issues Etc. Making the Case Conference in Collinsville, Illinois. For more information, just look for the Making the Case logo at issuesetc.org or call 618-223-8385.